What would save the world?
Veganism.
Gun control.
Ending capitalism.
Consensus.
More guns.
Nonviolent communication.
Anarchy.
Green energy.
Spirituality.
More regulation.
Emotional education.
End the war.
Libertarianism.
On drugs.
Socialism.
I'm Tuke Edelo, and this is
What Would Save the World on Radio Free Brooklyn every Wednesday from 3 to 4 p.m.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to What Would Save the World. I am Tuke Edelo, and today I am here with I'm here with Samantha Wisnia. Is that how you pronounce your name?
Wisnia.
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah, I actually listed that as my name on Facebook. It's the original Polish spelling of my last name, which means sour cherry. And I just did that so employers couldn't look me up. And employers also won't know that I'm, like, talking about Palestine on the radio.
Hello?
Hi.
Can you hear us?
I can.
All right. And how do we pronounce your name again?
Lynn Amarin.
Lynn Amarin. Okay. Welcome to What Would Save the World.
Hey, thank you. I'm happy to be here.
So,
sort of.
I'm sort of. you're on the phone. So sort of there. So we just got started. We got like Yiddish communist music playing in the background because Okay. Well, let me just start the episode. So we're going to be talking a little bit today about how Jews and Arabs can work together to end the occupation of Palestine and about some other things around that topic. But specifically, the reason why I chose to play some Yiddish music in the background, we're going to be playing some Palestinian hip-hop later. I chose to play this because that's like a weird thing about Israel is that they chose to not have Yiddish be the official language, and it's like it would be almost like if Rome decided they were going to stop speaking in Italian and they were now going to speak in Latin all the time. So it's like a very weird thing. So I decided to put on Yiddish. So I met Lynn Amarin at a open mic at under St. Mark's, and she read a really awesome poem about her identity in Palestine. And I know Samantha from open mics also, actually. I know everybody from open mics. But Leanne, do you want to start by reading your poem? We could just set it off with that.
Sure.
All right.
So the poem is called Heritage, and it's basically just kind of a little bit of a story of my identity with Palestine, kind of like how I relate to Palestine, but just me in general. Here it goes. I was born in a private hospital on the east bank of the Jordan River. My mother, a Lebanese woman of color born to a Lebanese Palestinian mechanic and a Palestinian feminist. My father, a Jordanian man with Bedouin roots tracing back longer than I can count. I grew up bleeding olive oil. My permanently sun-kissed skin marked by the red and white cross of a Jordanian hatta. My heart keeping rhythm to the traditional beat of an Arabic tabla. My mother couldn't give us Lebanese citizenship. Her womanhood forbid her from passing on her Lebanese identity, so we planted Lebanese cedar in the garden of our Jordanian home. Spent family outings on the beaches of the Red Sea, pretending the waves were crashing onto Lebanese shoreline. My father comes from a powerful Christian Arab tribe whose name means innovator, builder, creator, a title well fit for a founding family. Our Jordanian identity cemented and passed on when my grandfather broke bread with the grandfather of Jordan's current monarch. I can't claim to know the pain of having my home stolen while I still hold the key. To be lulled to sleep by the sound of bombs raining down on my hometown streets. It was only last year that my mother divulged her Palestinian roots to me. All I ever knew was that after a tough childhood, my grandmother in a boarding school and a French monastery was forced to flee when war broke out. Without even a warning to her family, without a chance to say goodbye, I was helping my mother out of application when I asked her where her parents were born. Palestine, she said. Well, what about Jiddo? Palestine, she repeated. When I asked her why she never told us we were Palestinian, she smiled at me and said, Habibi, my love, back then it was all the same. That's when it occurred to me. My grandparents are older than the borders that gave me a passport. Lines drawn on a map by white men that wanted to exploit the birthplace of civilization, a region with thousands of years of heritage, culture, and history demolished, broken down, erased, and restarted in the 1900s. That's when I started contemplating my Bedouin heritage. The traditional Arabic experience of a nomadic lifestyle dripped in hospitality, community, and black tea seasoned with the freshness of just-picked mint leaves. There's an old Arabic proverb that says, "When a stranger appears at your door, feed him for 3 days before asking who he is, where he's come from, where he's headed. That way you'll have strength enough to answer. Or by then you'll be good enough friends you won't care." I thought about all the times in history when the hospitality and generosity of dark-skinned people was exploited for imperial gain. I wondered how long those strangers waited before they tore apart the land. If after 3 days, my ancestors believed they were friends, how it felt when those borders cut our lands into wounds that have not stopped bleeding. 2017 marks 100 years of Palestinian resistance. Over a century since British colonial powers drew up Arab maps and gave us permission to govern our own land, only to turn around and hand Palestine to another European colonial project 2 years later. It's been 100 years since the Balfour Declaration. 100 years of olive trees uprooted, our motherland's lungs torn from her body as the genocide of her people continues to flood her veins. Today, I'm a migrant settler on Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee land, complicit in the violence enacted on the indigenous populations of Turtle Island through the same system of settler colonialism that continues to bleed my homeland dry. Today, as I wrap the black and white knots of a Palestinian kufiya around my neck, with Jordan's black iris and Lebanon cedar tattooed on my heart, I march with my indigenous brothers and sisters of the world. From Jerusalem to the Grand River, we demand decolonization. In the words of Beach, we remind those white men, we were here first. No ceiling to separate our blue doors from the sky. No horses to graze where our deer and camels used to graze. No strangers bursting in on the night of our wives. This earth is our grandmother. Each stone sacred in the hut where gods dwelt with us and stars lit up our nights of prayer. Our history was her history. Oh, give the wind a flute to weep for the people of this wounded place. And tomorrow, to weep for you.
Wow.
That was amazing.
That's fucking amazing. I remember, like, you read your poem at the open mic, and immediately I was like, you gotta come on my show. So that was fucking awesome. And I love that you talk about that, you connect that to like Turtle Island, and like that's something that I've been having a lot of discussions with people about like how people are like, oh, well, then why only Israel? Why do people only get upset about the colonization of Israel? I'm like, you're right. Some people do only talk about that. And that's fucking stupid, because they should be talking about how in New York here, we're on Lenape territory. We should be talking about all of this stuff. It's not just Israel. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, we have to be talking about colonialism and how it's formed kind of the entire world. And that's probably why it's so fucked up.
Right.
Exactly. That's exactly what it is.
So do you have anything like specific you want to say about that poem, or like anything more, like do you want to elaborate on anything that you said in that poem?
I mean, I guess I don't really know what I could elaborate on. I mean, for me, it's
very
really
clear.
Important.
Yes.
It's kind of just really important for me whenever I have any sort of conversation about Israel or Palestine to kind of approach it from a decolonial perspective, but also at it as intersectional of a lens as possible, because it is so similar to so many other issues and so many other conflicts and occupations all over the world. And I feel like it would be extremely hypocritical on my part to speak on one and not the other. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like something that a lot of people tend to forget about, or I guess a lot of times when I'm personally attacked, when I am talking about Palestine, I'm attacked for being because I'm singling out Israel, even though in the same vein that I'm saying boycott Israeli goods, I'm saying boycott Saudi, you know, like it's just, there's so much going on there. And I feel like people tend to forget that.
Mm-hmm. And it's also like this thing where it's to say like, oh, you can't just call out Israel without calling these other ones at the same time. It's almost like in like a weird inverted way is almost like an All Lives Matter kind of thing.
Well, it's a kind of deflection. Yeah. Is
exactly.
What it is.
Yeah. It's like a weird deflection. It's like when I say things like, when I call out the police, it's like, oh, you can't call out just the police. You have to call out the entire system. It's like, well, I do at the same time. but I can't, why can't I just, yeah, is this fucking deflection?
Right. Right. I'm thinking of what I have. I have a lot to say about that.
Your time. So something that's like, I really want to clarify is like, I feel like, I feel like this, the conflict is like way more about like territory and land and like colonialism than religion. And a lot of people want to make
and nationalism.
Nationalism.
Even racism itself, like, I mean, it's quite a white supremacist society in that even Jews of color are being oppressed. Mm-hmm. And that's something that a lot of people tend to forget.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I mean, yeah, there's a lot of that. There's a lot of Ashkenazi versus Sephardic versus Ethiopian. The whole Jewish, like, different groups is a lot. I don't even know how to get started on that.
Zionism has had a way of situating Ashkenazim like at the center of all Jewish discourse, which is a problem,
mm-hmm.
which is a huge problem. And I think that while there's valid historical trauma for, you know, Ashkenazim like myself, direct descendants of Holocaust survivors to be carrying, they seem to forget that we have now been acculturated and like accepted into whiteness.
We're super
assimilated. So what does that mean? And if we're really going to be true to like a radical Jewish legacy of anti-racism, then it is the Jews of color and the people of color of the world that we need to be defending now. And that we, rather than continuing to like position ourselves in like an eternal state of victimhood that like, but anyway.
Especially if like, I don't think that like Zionism is related to Judaism like at all. I mean, there is shit about going back to Israel and blah 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 blah. But to me, I see that all as like metaphor, as like trying to just find a society that's like peaceful and a world that's peaceful, and that's clearly not the occupation of Palestine. So like, I feel like Judaism to me, there's all this stuff in there that's about like tikkun olam, which is like to repair the world, and like mitzvahs and doing good by your neighbor, and that's not
tzedakah,
and that's not what, you know, the fucking occupation is doing. So I feel like if people want to approach it from a religious perspective, they're gonna have to really like, they're gonna have to, you can't really be a Zionist and believe that and believe in what I just talked about. That's what I believe.
I think the biggest tragedy whenever anybody talks about the conflict is always conflating the two and saying Judaism is Zionism, or mm-hmm. kind of assuming that any sort of criticism of Zionism is somehow a criticism of Judaism or an attack on Judaism. Mm-hmm. And if anything, that's just a sign of how great of a job that propaganda has been doing. You
right.
know?
Exactly. They're doing a great job. Thank you. Yeah, exactly.
Everybody believes that Zionism is Judaism and thinking that any sort of criticism of government even is somehow anti-Semitic, that's definitely something that...
But I'm sorry, you got a little faded out. What did you say?
Sorry, yeah, I was just saying that, I mean, it's definitely just the success of all the propaganda, especially when we think about how now it's all of a sudden, like, any sort of criticism of the government or the system is somehow anti-Semitic when it's really about a governmental body mm-hmm. and laws as opposed to a religion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And that's something that that's actually how me and Samantha got why Samantha is here, or like why I ended up inviting her on the show, is because we were talking about, I posted, did you hear about like the Dyke March in Chicago?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah. And I initially was like, the Star of David, that has nothing to do with Israel. That's just Judaism. I'm like, you can have radical Jews. I'm like, I'm a radical Jew. You know, I'm not going to not be Jewish just because of Zionists, you know, and all this stuff. And then Sam came on and was like, well, like, you got that symbol is on the flag. Do you want to say what you said?
Well, I wish we could like had that conversation to look at.
I can pull it up.
Yeah, but the point that I was making is essentially that, like, especially as radical, anti-imperialist, anti-racist, anti-colonialist Jews today, we can't simply accept wholesale the Jewish imagery that has been sold to us from a Jewish upbringing that was very much entrenched in Zionism. Okay, so that upbringing has told us that the Star of David is a symbol of our identity. And to an extent, yes, that's true, because we had to wear Stars of David to identify ourselves during the Holocaust, right? But that symbol for Palestinians has been a symbol of their annihilation. So I don't believe that we can go waving it around without expecting there to be consequences of that. So if we're going to claim that symbol, we have to reclaim that symbol. And we have to have a caption that says, like, Jews against Israeli apartheid, Jews against colonialism. We can't just... And also, like, one thing I just want to quote, Izzedine Mustafa is a really awesome Palestinian trans activist who I met a few years, well, like 5 or 6 years back at a Jewish Voice for Peace workshop. And he posted something. He posted a picture of, like, basically the Zionists waving that same rainbow Star of David flag at a pride march years before. And these were the same people who were, like, calling him a terrorist and saying racist shit. So we can't just, like, take the same imagery that, like, that's lazy and it's not responsible.
Also important to note in general as well is that flag has also been used for pinkwashing.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I don't really know all the details of exactly what happened, but from what I understand as well is that people that were holding that flag were also saying some Zionist things or like, I could be very wrong. I don't know. That's just what I read.
Well, you are actually likely correct. It's not clear what actually happened to this thing.
Yeah. But I mean, it is just definitely something that we need to keep in mind is that pinkwashing is such a huge strategy for kind of painting Israel as this beacon of democracy and liberation in the Middle East when mm-hmm. it's really not the case. I mean, whether it's for LGBT Palestinians or for even LGBT Jews and Israeli citizens themselves, like I've read so many articles about trans activists who have been placed in the wrong prison mm-hmm. when they just like didn't want to join the army. And I feel like pinkwashing is such a problem and I would hate to conflate that, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. That's actually what last week's episode was about. Just to do a quick little, advertisement for myself on What Would Save the World. It's on Audio Boom. That episode should be up soon. It's called What is Pinkwashing and How Do We Dismantle It? It was a great episode with queer performance artists Queen Amore and Caribou Vague. So we had a really great conversation about that. So you can check that out later. But it is super weird for Israel to be like, oh, look at how peaceful we are and how LGBT accepting we are. Oh, look at our military state. You don't join the military, you're out.
Right. Yeah. And there's sort of, it's interesting that critics of Zionism get called out for being anti-Semitic. But actually, the very founders of Zionism had internalized the same anti-Semitism to craft the idea of what the ideal Jew would look like.
Really? And that was, who is this?
So there's actually a really excellent discussion of this in Ellie Valley's Diaspora Boy, a new book, a large comic book that will take up your entire coffee table that I recommend to everybody. It's fucking amazing. And it's just like the most inspiring thing I've read as a radical Jew recently. And in his introduction, he actually talks about that, about how like... Maybe I can just quote a little piece of this. So about how like essentially the image of like the militarized male, the muscular, strong, like Zionist Jew is sort of a way for Jews to reclaim a sense of like masculinity and to you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm sorry, I'm just nervous.
Don't be nervous. This is like the chillest fucking show we're at. I regularly on this show have nothing to say and just start ranting about how doing this show for a year has made me the most depressed person in the world. So don't worry.
Okay, I have a quote. All right. So what isn't said enough is that maybe the architects of Jewish rebirth internalized more than they realized, perpetuating anti-Semitic perceptions and presumptions in a process they themselves might term self-hatred. Just listen to A.D. Gordon, one of the founding fathers of the labor Zionist movement. We are a parasitic people. We have no roots in the soil. There is no ground beneath our feet. And we are parasites not only in an economic sense, but in spirit, in thought, in poetry, in literature, and in our virtues, our ideals, our higher human aspirations. End quote. The Zionist solution was national autonomy, but first the individual had to be remade. The emancipated Jew is Okay, yeah, and here's him quoting another Zionist leader. It's difficult to overstate the vitriol. Quote, "The emancipated Jew is insecure in his relations with his fellow man, timid with strangers, and suspicious even of the secret feelings of his friends. He has become a cripple within and a counterfeit person without, so that like everything unreal, he is ridiculous and hateful to all men of high standards." That isn't an excerpt from Mein Kampf. It's from Max Nordau, the seminal founder of the Zionist movement and proponent of muscular Judaism, who exhorted Jews to once more become deep-chested, tightly muscled, courageous men. Addressing a Zionist gymnastics club in 1903, Nordau even boasted that morally, the new muscle Jews surpassed the ancient Jewish circus fighters because, unlike their predecessors, Zionist gymnasts did not try to hide their circumcisions. That same year, sitting with Theodore Herzl at the 6th Zionist Congress, Nordau watched a team of Jews, possibly after practicing with the Teutons, perform a gymnastics show. A subsequent report boasted that the gymnasts lacked pale faces, hunched over backs, and broken hearts and chests. Instead, they were healthy, ruddy men with strong muscles, young men whom, up until now, we were used to encountering only among the non-Jewish people of the world. So there's a lot of internalized anti-Semitism and emasculation that gave birth to that identity and this victim hero dichotomy that went into constructing that.
And it also sounds like a lot like white nationalism. It's fucking weird. I mean, all that I don't like any kind of nationalism, first of all, where it's like only like. Wait, sorry, what?
I said agreed.
I don't like any kind of nationalism, and I specifically don't agree with religious states. Like, it's fucking, it's like, okay, sorry, were you going to say something else about that?
Well, and also there's the fact that, like, we are not the only people to, and, like, I say we in terms of, like, okay, Ashkenazi Jews, like, we had to face the Holocaust, and we're not the only people that has faced genocide.
And we're not the only people who faced the Holocaust.
Right.
The Roma and all those people never got the reparations that the Ashkenazi Jews received.
Right. Right. So to respond to that with a solution that is essentially kind of a ironically enough, and ethnically pure, which the Jews are not. We're not a monolithic entity at all. state and in nationalistic terms is profoundly contradictory. And it's kind of like trying to dismantle the devil's house with the same tools.
Yeah, exactly. And that's like something that I feel like people encourage people to do a lot. Like whenever I talk to one of these like old white dudes who's like a libertarian who like has to like believe in conspiracy theories to make themselves feel better about their white privilege. You know what I'm talking about? One of those guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was like talking to me about like all these. I was like talking to him about like systemic disadvantages and da, 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 and he was like, well, they just need to learn how to be better at the game than the others in the game. I'm like, well, they probably are already, but that's besides the point. Like, I'm like, then why does somebody have to, like, assimilate that way? And he was kind of just, like, shrugging it off. It was a little ridiculous. But, so I think what we should do, unless anybody else has anything else to say.
No, take it away.
I think that we should play a song by, how do you say this? Is it Dam or D-A-M?
It's Dam, I believe.
Okay, so this is, yeah. This is the Palestinian hip hop group. It's called Who's the Terrorist? Min Arabi.
It might be good to read some of the. There's some translations.
What I was gonna do is play it and then read the translation.
Okay, perfect.
Or maybe I should. What do you think I should do first? What do you think? Should we read the lyrics first, or should we play it or read it after? I don't know. I feel like that might be nice to give the context.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe.
Yeah, let me find.
They're in the video, so if you just like,
I feel like I don't want to read it over the music though, because I feel like that ruins the whole thing.
No, I mean, like, could you?
Here, I found it. I found it right now. So it goes. Who's a terrorist? I'm a terrorist. How am I a terrorist? Well, I live in my country. Who's a terrorist? You're a terrorist. You've taken everything I own while I'm living in my homeland. Killing us like you killed our ancestors. Go to the law. Why bother my enemy? You're the witness, lawyer, and judge. If you're my judge, I'll be sentenced to death. You want us to be the minority to end up like the majority in the cemeteries in your dreams. Democracy more like Nazis. With your countless raping of the Arab soul, it got pregnant and birthed a boy called
called the suicide bomber. And here you are calling us terrorists. You attack me, but still you cry out. When I remind you it was you who attacked me, you silence me and shout. You let the little kids throw stones. Don't they have a family to keep them under lock at home? What, you must have forgotten that you buried our parents under the rubble of our homes. And now while my agony is so intense, you call me a terrorist. Why terrorist? Because my blood isn't calm, it's boiling. Because I hold my head high for my motherland. You killed my beloved, now I'm alone. My family driven out, but I will remain and shout. I'm not against peace. Peace is against me. It's going to destroy me, erase my culture. You don't listen to our voices. You silence us and degrade us. And who are you? When did you become ruler? Take a look at how many you've killed and how many orphans you've created. Our mothers are weeping. Our fathers are in anguish. Our land is disappearing. I reiterate, who are you? You grew up spoiled while we grew up in poverty. Who grew up with freedom and who grew up in confinement? We fight for our freedom, but you've made that into a crime. And you, the terrorist, call me a terrorist. When will I stop being a terrorist? When you hit me and I turn the other cheek, how do you expect me to thank who harmed me? I'll tell you what, you tell me how you want me to be. Down on my knees with my hands tied, my eyes to the ground, surrounded by bodies, houses destroyed and families driven out. Orphan children are freedom chained up. You oppress, you kill, we bury. We'll remain patient and suppress our pain. The most important thing is that you feel secure. Relax and leave the pain to us. What's our blood? The blood of dogs? Not even. When a dog dies, they receive sympathy. That means our blood is less valuable than the blood of a dog. No, my blood is precious, and I'm going to defend myself if you call me a terrorist. So, let's go right to that music. What?
I said I'm snapping all around.
Yeah, we're all snapping. Let's talk about the context of that after we play the video, or play the music, because it's really good music.
Years of assault on Palestinian rights. I think they're the most terrorized, or at least with the Iraqi people, they're the most terrorized people on earth and have been for so many years. Practically every Palestinian lives in constant harassment, threat of violence, humiliation, been that way for a long, long time.
ما كلني وانا عايش ببلادي قتلني زي ما تلت اجدادي
اجل القانون
عن فاضي ما انت يا عدو بتلعب دور الشاهد المحامي والقاضي علي قاضي نهايتي بادي حلمك انقل فوق معنى آلية حلمك لآلية تصير بالمقابر اكترية ديمقراطية
والله انكم ناسية
من كثر ما اغتصبتوا النفس العربية
هبلت ولدت
ولد اسمه عمليا انفجارية وهنا ديت ارهابية
يعني ضربتني وبكيت سبقني واشتكيت لما ذكرتك انك بدين
نصيت وحكيت
ما انتو بتخلوا ولاد صغار يرموا حجار ما لهمش اهل يدبوهم بالدار ايش كنو نسيت انو سحق ضب الاهل تحت الحجار وعلق لما وجع الفار بتناديني ارهابي
مين ارهابي انا ارهابي كيف ارهابي وانا عايش في بلادي مين ارهابي انت ارهابي ماكلني وانا عايش في بلادي
ليش ارهابي عشان دمي مش هادي حامي عشان رافع راسي وارض بلادي قتلوا حبايبي
انا لحالي
اهلي تشردوا
راح اضلي انادي
انا مش ضد السلام السلام ضدي علي بده يهدي تراثي بده يمحي واللي بيحكي كلمة بشد ورا همة بيكون زلمة
تعملوا منه رمة
ومين انتو لسه امتى خبرتو اتصلوا عدا شتلتو وعدا شتمتو امياتنا بيبكوا ابياتنا بيشكوا اراضينا بيخطفوا
انا بقولكم مين انتو
انتو كبرتو بدلا احنا كبرنا فقر مين كبر بوسع ومين كبر بجحر صار في داعي عملتو منه اجرامي وانت يا ارهابي بتناديني ارهابي
مين ارهابي انا ارهابي كيف ارهابي وانا عايش ببلادي مين ارهابي انت ارهابي ماكلني وانا عايش ببلادي امتى ببطل ارهابي لما تضربني كف واعطيك خد التاني كيف تتوقع مني اشكر الاذاني تعرف ايش انت قولي كيف بدك ياني راكع ركبي وايدي مربطات عيون بالارض وجثث مزتتات بيوت مهدوم عائلات مشردات اطفال يتيمه حريه كلبشات انت امر انت قطر احنا بنقبر ما علينا بنصبر وجعنا بنستر اهم شيء انك تحس بامان اتريح وسيب لنا الالام ما هو دمنا دم كلاب حتى لا لما الكلب يموت في الرفق بالحيوان يعني دمنا ارخص من دم الكلاب لا دمي غالي رح ادافع عني لو تناديني ارهابي
مين ارهابي مين ارهابي مين ارهابي مين ارهابي مين ارهابي مين ارهابي مين ارهابي انت ارهابي
هذه الارض كاجتة تون كلها شوف الشجرة شوف مش حرام؟
هون We'll talk about we're back on the air. Hello everybody. So we were all discussing very excitedly about what we were going to talk about next. Hi, can you still hear us, Nian?
Yep.
Okay, cool. Sorry, everything got a little we were talking about what we should talk about next. Da, 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 da. So you're listening to What Would Save the World on Radio Free Brooklyn, by the way. If you like Radio Free Brooklyn and you want to help us, we are the sound of Brooklyn. You can go to radiofreebrooklyn.com/donate. So now we're gonna try to we talked a little bit about background on this, but now we want to talk about like exactly how do Jews and Arabs work together to end the occupation of Palestine? That's like a huge question. I don't think we're going to really have an answer for that. We can talk a little bit about that. But you were actually talking about something, Lane, just as I was taking us off of our conversation about, were you saying about how like people conflate this as like a Jewish versus Muslim thing?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. But I mean, that's really not the case, right, at all. I mean, Palestinians are not monolithic people. They're not all Muslim. They're within Palestinian populations, there are Jews, Christians, and Muslims, and, you know, people of any other faith. And I feel like that's really important to remember that this isn't at all about religion, and it never really was.
Yeah, and Jews want to make it about religion so they can... Not Jews. Sorry, I just fucked that up.
Zionists
want to make this about religion because it gives them the upper hand, especially because, like, the Holocaust, because everybody's afraid of being anti-Semitic because of that. But... So I actually don't know what BDS is, so I feel really fucking stupid. So why don't y'all just talk about that, and we can talk about what that is. And I'll
Leem, do you want to take the floor?
Okay. Yeah, so I'll start. So basically, the BDS movement, BDS stands for the Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions Movement. So it's a Palestinian-led movement. So it's actually a Palestinian strategy towards fighting the occupation, and it was very much inspired by the sanctions and boycott movement that ultimately ended the South African apartheid. And so within the BDS movement, basically what it's saying is asking for a global boycott, divestment, and sanctions on illegal occupation and just Israeli goods in general, basically just to pressure the Israeli government to stop all of the illegal shit they're doing. They mainly have three goals. Three demands from Israel, which is number one, to end its occupation and colonization of all Arab lands and dismantling the wall. Number two, recognizing the fundamental rights of the Arab Palestinian citizens of Israel to full equality. And number three, respecting, protecting, and promoting the rights of Palestinian refugees to return to their homes and properties as stipulated in UN Resolution 194. So it's kind of like a little summary of the BDS movement.
Yeah, and I was reading a lot about like different solutions today, and a lot of them are like a lot, especially the ones proposed by like so-called left-wing Israelis. They're like, oh, there should be no right of return. That's ridiculous. That's so ridiculous to be like, there's no right of return after you fucking like, that's insane.
Right, because it's not as if these Israelis are exactly being like, they're not contemporary refugees, so to speak. So yeah.
And actually I was reading today, that's kind of a myth. Actually, that's something that I thought for a long time. More people definitely did go to Israel after World War II, but it was way before. It was like World War I that they started sending Jews over there, because there was this guy, forget his name, but he was a Zionist, like a Zionist nationalist, and he believed the Jews needed their own nation, and Britain promised like that area to like a bunch of different people. Like, not just...
Yeah, it was the Balfour Declaration in 1917 mm-hmm. that kind of promised it to the Jews as a Jewish home, or to the Zionists as a Jewish homeland, right after 2 years prior having decided that this was going to be part of the Arab liberation, you know, and like all of that. So it was kind of, they promised it to a lot of people. And actually, a lot of people don't actually know is that when the Zionist movement was kind of gaining traction, they were looking at multiple places in the world
right.
for a Jewish land, not
Madagascar,
just Israel.
Like, yeah.
They looked at Argentina, I believe, mm-hmm. even. There was definitely a lot of places. Like, it was never... And then it kind of came down to Palestine. And then, of course, the promised land argument came up. And so, mm-hmm. I'm sure that was convenient.
Mm-hmm. So... So yeah, it's I guess I forget why we got on that topic, but we were talking about like you were talking about refugees and how it's like
right and I mean, 1948 created millions of refugees into other Arab countries all around the world. You see them in the United States, in Latin America. And the fact is Israel, the settler colonial project of Israel is continuing to create refugees because it's continuing a project of ethnic cleansing. And we have to be very clear about that when we are talking about, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I'm sorry to cut you off. Like, even a lot of the refugees from 48 are still in refugee status today. Like, they're families are still in refugee status today, and I think a lot of people don't know that. Like, there are so many, like, I can speak from experience in Jordan having so many Palestinian refugees here. There are still refugee camps where just Palestinians in it. And this is a place where Palestinians have assimilated into our society, you know? So it's kind of, a lot of people don't realize how much of a crisis this refugee crisis really is. Like, they really very much are still refugees.
Oh, definitely. Oh, no. Which, are still refugees, just not Jewish refugees.
Which brings me to a point that, like...
I'm just referring to the 48 ones.
No, that's what I meant when I said there are... that the. It doesn't matter. We know what's going on.
Can I just... So, yeah, and that just brings me to a point that I want to make that, like, when I'm having this argument with a Zionist or with, like, a progressive Jew who is still attached to Zionism because of the historical trauma of the Holocaust, which did itself, like, which did create refugees. I mean, like, technically my family in the U.S., like, are refugees from from that war. And on one side, I'm first generation. You know, I wouldn't be here if it weren't for Holocaust survivors. But they often situate a contemporary discussion about Palestine within their historical trauma, which in a way I think really deflects a needed conversation about the fact that the Palestinian plight is a refugee crisis that is ongoing and that is unresolved, rather than one that's merely kind of like a plaguing me psychologically. You know what I mean?
It's very real.
Yeah. So I think that like a big thing I want to talk about is that those Jews, and I think a lot of these Jews who say the left is anti-Semitic or who react that way when I try to have a very frank conversation about Zionism, and I really don't mince words, like it tends to come out very harsh when I talk to them about it. And that's why a lot of people don't like me for that. But that, like, when they, oh my God, I lost my train of thought.
Well, what I can say is I can say real quick, I want to say like two things real quick. Just when I talk about, there is a lot of anti-Semitism on the left. There actually is, but it's not about Israel. That's where, you run into these like Assadist types, like these like authoritarian left PBA tanky. You run into these fucking tankies, and that though they tend to overlap with like people who believe really heavily in like the Rothschild and all this, like, and that's where you get this weird like prejudice against Ashkenazi Jews that's like, which I understand why that exists, but it's also, it's like, oh, they were like mutants created in the caves of the Khazar and they're not even real Jews, and like all this shit about how like the Rothschild Jews is a whole like world conspiracy and that all Ashkenazi Jews are descended from the Rothschilds and all this crazy. So that's where you get,
I mean, like there's some truth to the fact that like Ashkenazi Jews are a very closely tied group genetically, and like, yes, it's a hard sell to say that we are like a Middle Eastern people, even though like some of us like do have Middle Eastern blood, like myself included. But that's not, even if we did, like, what necessarily would that prove?
But we're not mutants from caves.
Well, so, but I think here's the problem. Here's the problem that I've noticed, at least, and I am way, like, I wouldn't even say that I am as, like, enmeshed in the current, like, scene of activists as I used to be, as I was in college. But what I've seen is that the same people who are kind of, I feel that this anti-Semitism on the left thing, here's how we should deal with it. When genuine instances of it occur, we should call it out. However, what I've been seeing happening is that fellow Jews who like kind of joined leftism when Bernie Sanders came out, basically, are the people like, let's be real, who are the people who have been like, well, this is an attack on me, and I just like don't think you fully understand Zionism, and like the left is so anti-Semitic, and they're citing like, you know, some psycho making a YouTube comment about like the Rothschilds, you know what I mean? And like, so that is something very different from making a valid critique of Zionism.
Some and dude like watching some, Alex Jones taking LSD.
Right. So I think like there's a tendency to blow that problem out of proportion. Like I'm not going to deny that it exists because I have encountered it. And I have encountered it on two occasions. Two occasions in all the time that I've been involved in this. Like there was one time where these people called like the Council for the National Interest were flyering. And I'll say that every time I've encountered it, it's been from white people. It's never been from like anyone other than white people. And when I've encountered it in people of color, it's been because they took the same terms that Zionism articulated and were kind of voicing it as a critique of Jews as oppressors. So I really think that we need to look at that as distinct from anti-Semitism itself. Because since Zionism,
Because I definitely see that in within like when in the activist circles that I run in, even when I'm talking to other Arabs about it, who are maybe not as well versed on the discourse in general, when any sort of anti-Semitism does come out, as soon as you kind of like say, well, actually, no, that's Zionism, they're almost always agreeing. Like, actually, yeah, I mean, I'm referring to the occupier as opposed to the religion. Mm-hmm. So I think, yeah.
Right.
And you also see some of that, like when people are critiquing like white supremacy or like whiteness, they're like, we're not talking about specific white people. We're talking about the culture of whiteness and colonialism and cultural dominance.
Into which, you know, Ashkenazi Jews have been assimilated over the years, which doesn't negate the fact that like, yes, there's a very real historical trauma, but it has to be dealt with in a responsible way. And
for sure,
the first step to healing from trauma, and this is going to sound blunt and perhaps trite, but the first step is recognizing that the past is the past. That is the first step.
And also analyzing the behaviors that what oppressed you in the past and not redoing it. Like that's something I have written down in my notebook, is like when the oppressed become the oppressor. And that's like just sums up exactly what's going on.
And like I know Ashkenazi Jews who are like, well, I don't identify as white. And the thing is that like that's not valid, because how you identify, we've been like situated in this discourse where it's all about like how you feel and I'm not going to invalidate your feelings. I'm not going to gaslight you. But the thing is that like I define myself based on how I'm treated. Okay, so based on how I'm treated, I am a white person. Am I the same as Anglo white people? Absolutely not. Do I identify with them? Absolutely not. But we need to understand that the fact that we were once not considered white people should be all the more reason for us to say, okay,
exactly.
We should be centering like Palestinian voices, brown, the voices of like Jews of color, and saying, okay, what can we do to support your struggle since like we've made it to,
It's really, really important to note that the same system that has oppressed Jews in the past and does continue to oppress Jews all over the world in many different ways is the exact same system of this white supremacy. So we kind of have to remember that, you know?
Yes.
I feel like a lot of people also, like within Israel, for example, there's this kind of divide even within Mizrahi, like the Arab Jews and stuff like that, where they kind of will take on this kind of similar idea of blaming the Palestinian for not being treated like a white Jew when it's really still the same system of white supremacy that's oppressing you both, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's important to remember, because people always forget that. And I feel like people are afraid and they shy away from that term of when we say white supremacy, but that's just exactly what it is.
Right. Like, of which Zionism is another manifestation and like another version of that.
Exactly. It was really interesting. I was doing some reading earlier today, and I actually found that in 1974, the UN had actually passed a resolution calling Zionism a form of racism, which I had absolutely no idea about. And I thought that was so fascinating. It was then revoked in 1991, but I had no idea that that had even happened.
Wow. I mean, I'm glad that that happened. I hope we can get it back. So I want to talk a little bit more about this boycott, divest, and sanction. So we want like nations to do this, but what I was thinking is specifically to answer the question of like, how can Jews and Arabs work together to end the occupation of Palestine? Can individual Jews and people in general not buy products from Israel, not support?
I definitely follow the BDS movement. They actually have on their website like a whole list. They tell you exactly how to do it and how to go about it. And it's honestly a lot easier than you would imagine. But it's also, I think, in general, when it comes, like, I think the most important thing that Jews can do when it comes to this conflict, and if they want to elevate Palestinian voices, is make sure that people are realizing that Judaism and Zionism is not the same.
Yes.
Make sure that
we can't hear you. Sorry, say that one more time.
Sorry, yeah. Basically, what Jews can do is make sure that they're elevating Palestinian voices and making sure that people know that when we critique Zionism, it's not Judaism. Make sure that people realize that this conflated kind of synonym thing is going on. It's just not true. That's just not what it is. When we talk about the Israeli government, we're talking about the illegal occupation, we're talking about war crimes, we're not talking about Judaism. We are attacking a system that mm-hmm. is racist, completely fucked up, and kind of oppresses everybody involved, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And something that I want to say is, like, I know you said that, you know, and it's true that not all Arab people are Muslim, but I also want to make it very clear that, like, the word Semite is actually anything that comes from, like, Arab language. It's actually a language thing, I believe, Semitic. Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah.
It's, yeah.
So, like
the region.
Yeah, so I want something that, like, I've said when I'm drunk, like on stage, I'm like, if you're fucking with a Muslim, you're fucking with the Jews. You know, I've like said this at open mics and stuff. But what I mean by that is, like, they're both Semitic. So if you say anti-Semitic and you only mean Jews, even though, like, colloquially it's been mostly about Jews, I still think it's the same thing. So if you are like anti-Palestine, you're anti-Semitic.
I mean, I get that, but I mean, I've definitely used that argument in the past, but personally, I kind of tend to shy away from that kind of thinking now, because I do realize that anti-Semitism has been used as a weapon against Jews more so than it has been used against Arabs. And I think that's something that we need to know. And even when we're being occupied and oppressed by Jews and being called anti-Semitic for calling that out, we still need to realize that that kind of anti-Semitism definitely affected Jews more than it did Arabs. And I feel like I personally, like, as an Arab, I don't think I have the right to say that, you know?
Okay.
Does that make sense?
I think that's a great point. And we also need to, like, give anti-Arab discrimination and persecution. We need to be specific that, like, that's targeted at Arabs and at the Arab world, rather than, you know, grouping it under, you know, because there was a time where, like, you know, Muslims were some of our biggest protectors and allies, like, during World War II. There were Muslims that, like, actually hid Jews, you know. But we're in a different...
I'm sorry, what? Yeah,
that, like...
What were you saying, Lian?
I was agreeing.
Sorry. Oh, sorry. It's hard to hear.
Sorry.
I'm going to make sure you don't get cut off, because it's hard to hear.
The point. I'm sorry.
No, I just wanted to agree with what Liam said about how, like, you know, we can use the term Islamophobia, but, like, talking more broadly, like, about, like, Arabs in the Arab world, and how there's a very, like, colonialist racism, and especially, like, post 9/11, it's been mobilized in a certain way that has been very favorable to Zionism. So we need to look at those as, like, two different things. And when we're looking at anti-Semitism, we need to understand that the nature of that anti-Semitism is it's kind of fluid, depending on, like, where it's coming from. As I was saying before, if it's coming from, like, Hezbollah or something like that, they're using the same terms that, like, Zionism has articulated for Jews. You know what I mean? So if, like, someone's saying, like, we don't support the right of the Jewish state to exist, or we don't, like, they're going with what the Zionists what Zionism has said. And
definitely,
yeah,
sorry to cut you off, but I just feel like it's really important to also note that a lot of times Israel has, or not Israel maybe, but the government has been anti-Semitic themselves.
Yes.
Like, just by plating Jewish symbols with a white supremacist ideology is itself anti-Semitic.
Right. It's kind of deeply insulting, really.
Exactly. And I feel like people need to kind of start calling that out as well.
Right. Because there's this conception, like, it's just funny that, you know, oftentimes, like, when I'm arguing with super Zionists, like, I always get this, that, like, I'm self-loathing, right? But the very conception of what it means to be Jewish that comes out of Zionism is actually a rejection of much of what Ashkenazi Jewry and world Jewry really was before the advent of that movement, which was, you know, not a militarized culture. And when you transition into, like, a militarized culture, there's an embrace of, like, a toxically masculine idea of what Jews should be. Basically, like, it, in short, it was like, we're not sexy and we need to become sexy. We need to get muscles and, like, we need, like...
And it's also very male-focused, which always, a lot of this hyper-masculine stuff is, like, super gay. And then it's, like, nothing wrong with being gay, obviously, because I'm kind of gay. But I still feel like a lot of this, like, literature about, like... And you can find this in Nazi literature, too. If it's like, oh, we take out our passions on the battlefield. You know, it's, like, super, super homoerotic.
Right, and I mean, it's Zionism is, in a way, it's almost like a militarization of Jewish culture, not to mention a co-optation of, like, Palestinian food and culture.
God, oh my, don't even get me started on that. Yeah. Kills me every time.
Falafel, Israeli falafel. I got my dad, like, really into za'atar, and he loves it. And we were eating it, and, like, my dad, you know, of course, like, after the Curb Your Enthusiasm episode, he was, like, telling my aunt and uncle, who are, like, very Zionist, like, yeah, I made some Palestinian chicken. And they're like, oh, yeah, with the za'atar, like, you mean the Israeli chicken? We had that in Israel.
Oh, my God. So I post these questions throughout the show that are like, oh, what is it? I wrote, how is Zionist nationalism similar to white nationalism? Mm. And somebody said, both are anti-Semitic. Mm-hmm. And then someone said, both are fear-based systems. And then someone said, Zionism is anti-Jewish. And then somebody said, remember, Arabs are Semitic. And then the person who said Zionism is anti-Jewish said, do you think that Aryan nation applies to Indian people, or that inflammable means fire resistant? I don't know. This is just, I don't understand. But this is some Zionist freaking out. And I just said LOL to them, because it's like,
yeah, LOL is all they're really
LOL. Anyway, fuck that. But I do want to, Sage, who's contributed to the show before, said, whoa, tell your pals that, like, I don't know, I'm learning so much right now. So aww, we're doing very good. I let that get off topic, just because we have, like, a Zionist freaking out right now, and it's kind of funny.
I mean, that's going to happen. There's always going to be trolls. Always.
Also, like, I guess, like, first, I maybe want to let Liam speak on this, but I, of course, like, it's very taboo topic and thing to discuss, but, you know, I think... As they mentioned, like, in the lyrics of that song, Minat Habi, like, we have, Zionism has demonized the resistance of Palestinians, and has demonized especially, like, you know, some of the more militant resistance. And I think, like, I have this poem that my grandmother actually wrote when she was in the Krakow ghetto in 1942. That
I totally stalked you and Googled you and read that poem, and I'm obsessed with it.
Oh, my God. How did you found that on what?
So here's what I think. I want to say something real quick, though. I think you should read that, but yeah. I actually want to close with "Damn Song Who You Are," because it's like a feminist. It's almost, it's like a feminist song, and I just, like, want to, because I feel like it.
Yeah.
It challenges the stereotype that Arab people are sexist. I'm sure there are sexist people in every culture, so it just shows that there are people who are not. Do you know what I mean? So I want to play that, because it's important. But
so what order should we do this?
Do the poem.
Okay, yeah, because, like, also, Liam, we have to talk after this about, like, how you found this for me when you Googled me. So essentially, like, my cousin was doing one of those trips where it's like you go to Poland and then you go to Israel so that you can get traumatized, and then you can get your trauma healed on a nice, nice vacation. So anyway, this is... This is "To the Teachers" by my grandmother, Helen Brunengraber, Krakow Ghetto, 1942. You taught us to strive for a life of ideals. You exhorted us through verses and poems to soar on the wings of enthusiasm, to unravel life's innermost secrets. You taught us to love the magic of words, to go into raptures weeping with awe, to press ever onward and search unrelentingly for the truth in the cosmos unrevealed. You enchanted our spirits with humanist phrases. You taught us to worship the glory of genius. For this, I am now bowed with suffering. I face the cruel world, all helpless and lost. We should have been taught to spring from a crouch, to seize hold of a neck with an iron-strong grip, to strike at the forehead with a merciless fist until lifeless he crumples and falls. You should have taught us to shriek till we're heard, how to crash through a gate that is cracked, how to kill to avoid getting killed, and get used to the glitter of blood. O erudite teachers, men of vast knowledge, did you really and truly not know that the earth has no place for a humanist? Why did you plant yearning in our hearts? Mm-hmm.
Are you done? Wow.
So yeah, I mean, the same way that, like, people will demonize will demonize that kind, will demonize like violent resistance. I like to remind them of this poem in which my grandmother, like in the Krakow ghetto, was saying like, wow, I feel so helpless. And, you know, the fact that that resistance exists, what does that say about the conditions that Palestinians are in and who is responsible for those conditions? And I think that Jews on the left, like really have a lot of self-reflection to do about our attachment to an ideology that has put Palestinians in that very same position. So that's why I want to, yeah.
I mean, even peaceful strategies, peaceful ways of attacking the occupation or even calling it out have also been demonized. Like BDS has been called hate speech, and
right.
called it has been criminalized in lots of places. And that's a fully peaceful, nonviolent kind of strategy, you know. So I think even that is demonized. And we have to also call that out, you know.
Mm-hmm. So we have like a few minutes, and I want to read the lyrics to this song and close out with that. But does anybody have anything like to say before we sign off?
Liam, I loved your poem. I'm so excited to talk to you after this. And I just took, thank you so much for inviting me to be on
thank
this show.
Thank you for both being I'm on just... What Would Save the World on Radio Free yeah. Brooklyn. How can Jews and Arabs work together to end the occupation of Palestine? You know how you do that? BDS. I actually never heard of that until just now. And I think that's a really good idea. Everybody should look into that. I posted that on the Twitter for What Would Save the World. But Liam, do you want to finish off with anything?
Yeah, I just want to thank you both for everything. It's been awesome talking to you, and I kind of hope we can keep this conversation going later.
Yes.
Oh yeah, I think we should have a part two at some point soon, and we should also have other. I don't know if either of you are down with this, but I'm eventually gonna have an episode where I have a Zionist on here and talk to them.
Oh
but I,
God. We need
a, no, I'm, I actually think that this one Zionist.
Can we all take a Valium first?
I mean. Yeah, sure. So I don't know if we have enough time to read the lyrics to the song, but thank you. Okay, you've been listening to What Would Save the World on Radio Free Brooklyn. If you ever want to be on the show, email me at tok@radiofreebrooklyn.org or you can radiofreebrooklyn.com. Sorry, tok@radiofreebrooklyn.com. And you can invite me on a date too, because I love to be invited on blind dates. And you can follow my Twitter at @2KEDALOW, and you can get involved with the discussion on there. Are either of you trying to promote anything? No. Okay. So the song is called Who You Are, and I'm probably only getting to play it for like a minute, but it goes, I am the single, the sterile, and the divorced. I am the better living with a man than living alone. I am the dishes, the ironing. I am everything. I am nothing, but remind me, who are you? I am the woman gossip. I can't give birth to boys. I am the strong. I am 100 men. I am the honor. I am the shame. I am the everything. I am nothing, but remind me, who are you? And more comes. So I'm going to turn off. We're just going to start this because I want to fucking play it.
أجل القانون على الفاضي ما انت يا عدو بتلعب قاعد المقاعد المحامي والقاضي علي قاضي نهايتي بادي علمك انقل فوق معنى علية علمك لعلي تصير بالمقابر اكترية ديمقراطية والله الروحية كثر ما اغتصب كل نفس العربية ابنك وانت ولا تسمع عملية فجارية وهنا دير
ثلاثية أحلام مستغاني بقدر أقبس نوال السعداوي بقدر أنتقد عقيد الحارة بضل فيمينيست عايش على طبيخ الماما مش عنيف مش هسوي عينيها زرق بس كعريس بفضل عينيها زرق مش محلك تأقرر مش محلك بس هجرب مش محلك لو محلك كنت بحرر يا حرية وعدل لكل طرف هنا يا بنبلش نقتل شباب على شرف عيلة نعم نتحشى فيها بمصر وبنتهضب بالليل بنتاجر فيها في أمريكا وبنغتبها بالهند وبنرجعها طب تعمل لي ولاد